Is
Yep,
we're good.
It is 9:18. We do have a quorum for the Committee of Public Safety and Security. So we will get started. I know Chair Kaplis of this committee is will be joining us shortly. Chairman Kaplis is here. As soon as he has a quorum for his committee, he'll officially join us.
We have a quorum.
We are here today to continue the discussion that Chairman Kaplan started in his committee on the consolidation proposal submitted by the administration. We welcome both commissioners of public safety and emergency services and their associate, their colleagues. I just make a couple of comments. And again, I'll ask the Chairman Kaplan if you want to say anything, and then we'll get into it. I just wanted to first welcome you. And just a couple of items I'd like you to consider in your responses and focus. Hopefully the members of the committee have had the proposal, have read it. I don't know if we need to go through line by line of the exact proposal, but we'll get to the questions and answers. But some of my concerns are, first, that the timing for next year's budget. There's questions, is this, to the extent you know, is this going to be in the county executive's budget proposal to be commencing January 1st? What are the expectations of all this getting done on time? I'd like if you could to address the cost. As I went through it, there's a fair amount of discussion of the savings, the personnel, attrition as through the years. But there are several issues, communications, IT, back office. There seems to me, and we'll get into more details, but there's some substantive issues that have to be dealt with, and I didn't see any real, potential costs, either operating or capital, associated with coming together, just more to focus on the savings. So I'd like to, get a bigger picture of that. And finally, at least for public safety, at least for a chair of public safety, my committee, are obviously public safety, emergency services is a core mission of the county. So, our priority, my priority concern is efficient delivery of services, of those services to our constituents. Saving money is always good, but I want to keep my committee's focus on the core mission that the two of you, your departments, have to protect our constituents. And just cutting money for the sense of cutting money and to the effect that might negatively impact that mission, that's our concern. So as we look at this, obviously we're concerned. We would love to see some savings. But from the public safety side, the core mission of adequate and efficient, the efficient services are coming together, I want to see that it makes sense to come together in on behalf of our constituents. So just those few comments, I will turn it over to Chairman Kaplis, but I have asked the commissioner along with when he gets started. He and I have talked in the past about the overtime policy. Overtime generally has been an issue of just general concern to us on the board and everybody. And I know the commission has been working on that. So as he gets into his presentation on the consolidation, I have asked him if he'd like to take just a couple of minutes to tell us how his sort of new overtime policy is working out financially. With that, Mike, I'll go.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to note that Government Reform, Efficiency, and Savings has a quorum. Chairman, legislator, we can go forward. Thank you, legislator, Chairman, for letting us join you. I think the combination of the two committees is a very powerful one, and one that can best get to the bottom of the intricacies and the benefits and that which needs to be changed in this particular merger. I would also put forward as a template that the Committee on Reform, Efficiency, and Savings will meet with whichever other substantive committee is involved in any other proposed mergers. I think that provides the best firepower, the best horsepower, if you will, for the board in general. So that, Mr. Chairman, we set it up last time when we were singularly that we recognized the two sides, the service delivery side, the budget side. We spent most of our time in questions regarding the budgetary and the administrative side and left to your purview, since it is the Public Safety Committee, Public Safety and Security, the whole issue of the substantive side, not to say that we as individuals do not have comment on nor the ability to speak about. So very, very inquisitive and looking forward to the discussion on the substantive side, but procedurally, if I could just jump into it. A few things. We did ask last time for We came to points where there were modifications. There was, as Mr. Harcum recalled today, a fact sheet, if you will, or a detail type sheet that the administration had promised to put together. So if you have some material, if you could present it to us, that would be great. And while you're doing that, a few other questions. One is just to be noted on page 2 at the top, and Chief Kapika, sure, this is actually the legislation itself proposed, so, local law.
About the deputy commissioner?
About the deputy commissioner.
I had that question.
And Chief Kapika had brought that to all our attention, where there shall be a deputy commissioner within the department, but the flow chart references 3 deputy commissioners, not 1 deputy commissioner. So we want to talk about that. And finally, Mr. Chairman, I think that having gotten quite a bit, just to give a real broad purview and then we can dive in, having gotten comments, as we all did, from many of our direct and then county-wide interested individuals, particularly I, anyway, have gotten from mostly the fire side, concerned about the merger and the de-emphasization of the department, almost, again, the hostile takeover phrase that we use versus a merger. I think it might be advisable that we meet with, and certainly if my committee is open too, and if you are as well, the fire advisory and the police advisory board, since we have them there, and they have offered up their services, and we would want to, I think, tap into their expertise to be able to get, since their advisory, is tell us exactly their view, any changes or modifications that they would be recommending, and we could then, they could then be the conduit for a very well-intentioned but disparate group of people who can focus their attention on their advisory, and then we can hear from the advisory in a very efficient fashion. And so I think that that would allow us very quickly to get a good learning curve and give us a fighting chance to get this done before. And my last cautionary, which I've said to the administration, and very gently I'll say it again, is we are participatory in this process, but it's now the middle of September. The budget time is the middle of November. We kind of, you know, I'm not going to ask everybody for their 500-word essay on what I did this summer. You know, it was due today, but you can, you know, still get it in tomorrow. But we kind of frittered away a lot of the summertime. We're looking to maybe bring the health and the mental health departments together, maybe doing away with your transportation department, maybe bringing corrections and probation together. You know, that whole flow chart, at least we want to have that discussion. And I don't think this board will work as efficiently if it's all dumped on our lap on November 15th with the budget and say, oh, by the way, you know, here, remake county government and here are all the budgetary numbers that go with it. It's going to clog up the workflow and we're not going to be able to do it as efficiently and as timely. So with those cautionaries, Mr. Chairman, I join you. Maybe we can kind of dive into the administration and let them respond to what you asked, what we asked last time, and just kind of start this process.
Thanks. Yeah, let me just say that was, I guess the roundabout way, the reason for my first question about in terms of the budget, when it's going to start, was getting to the point that Jerry Kaplan was making.
Jerry.
We obviously want to work as quickly and as efficiently as we can to try to meet whatever goals we want to set, but at the same time, this is a very important undertaking, and that was my question, whether the administration was maybe looking at a March phase in, or if the goal is January 1st, then we all certainly can work towards that goal. But again, we don't want to feel pressured to have to do something without fully understanding all the pros and cons. Because again, the proposal is, it's selling the case, it's making the point. And whereas I asked for a course, what are the cons? There's a lot of all the pros are laid out here. To be fair to the process, with your expertise and your background, I'd like to know, do you see any, again, what are the cons and how would you deal with the cons as opposed to just all the pros? So with that, I know we have the 2 commissioners here, but Commissioner Longworth, I will turn
to you first. Would you digress to the overtime first?
Yes, absolutely, okay. Please.
Okay, direction. As I think both chairmen and both committees should be aware, Public Safety conducted a reorganization in January of this year. We redeployed people to patrol in an effort to reduce overtime, which was our mandate at the time. The Department of Public Safety has so far reduced overtime by 16,000 hours compared to all of 2009. I think we have a chart that illustrates that, maybe in front of you.
Yeah.
That has resulted in saving the taxpayers $1.1 million. The department reached and exceeded its goal for reduction in overtime of $1 million for all of 2010 by the end of August, 4 months early. We continue to manage the overtime very prudently. The reduction in police overtime and other expenses is always balanced against protecting public safety. In these tremendously challenging fiscal times, we believe we have found a good balance between austerity and maintaining public safety. It's also important to note that these savings have been achieved in addition to other savings or simultaneously with other savings. The department has reduced its headcount by 14 people. That translates into more than 20,000 hours, man hours of service. And that's essentially where we are at this juncture of the road.
Thank you. Yes, I want to advise the committees that as I'm relatively new on this committee, there's a chairman, so both commissioners did host me in their offices in the last couple of months. I had a chance to meet with them, and I know I met with Commissioner Longworth. This was one of the points that we went over, and I felt that just as we get this bigger proposal, I thought it was a good job that he seems to have been on this overtime issue, and I wanted to make sure he shared all that information with all of you. Yes, Ken.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On the breakout on the overtime, Commissioner, on it's a great savings and it's a good job. The question is, can you break that out for us? I mean, comparative, 2009 to 2010, don't do it now. Does that have a level of detail to show some of the differences? And I'm not sure if it's in the documentation that we have.
I have another one. I didn't know how deep we wanted to go.
Bring it on.
So we can understand the differences.
Just so you know, the chart you're looking at.
$16,000 of overtime difference. And, what did we do different than we're doing now?
Just so I can show you how to interpret the chart. The chart you're getting is the August 31st report. The left column is the monthly overtime figures. The center column is the year-to-date compared to last year. And on the right is the month-by-month savings that we've approved.
I didn't want to. We have really another agenda item, but I felt this was important and useful information and good information to hear.
I'm happy to respond to.
They obviously came prepared to share, so I appreciate it because I thought it was a good message. All we hear is sort of maybe going the other direction. So I thank you for having this information available.
Can I ask a question about it?
Sure.
John, he's going to respond.
In a nutshell, overtime has been all non-incidental overtime that's not dictated by an arrest or an event occurring, now requires command-level approval to authorize it. To begin with, we found significant savings in that. Furthermore, we redeployed as many as 16 detectives from the investigative side of the house to the patrol side where most of the overtime was coming from. And that's where we attribute most of the savings to, essentially a reorganization, just using the people differently. But it has not affected the core mission of the department.
And investigations meaning the officers that we loan to different departments, to various local departments, or I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
There's been no effect, but other assists to other departments, is another core mission of public safety. And we provide a broad array of support services to local police for forensics, ballistics, accident investigation, aviation, just to name a few. We are on pace in 2010 to provide the same 60,000 man-hours to support local jurisdictions that we did last year.
Legislator Nona, do you want to...
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, some of these show huge decreases. Is that just because of circumstances as opposed to planning? For instance, the homicide death investigation shows like a 74% reduction in overtime. Is that just because there's less investigations? Has there been some change in the approach?
No doubt one or two heavy cases will drive the number back up again, but nonetheless, the prior year was not driven by any particular case that caused it to rise to the level that it's at or that's displayed on the chart in front of you.
And another big decrease was in the parks. Is that the mounted unit? There's a section.
No.
Okay.
Sorry. We just changed the system by which we're deploying in the parks.
My question.
Two questions.
The major
tiny question and then the bigger question. Tiny question is the largest increase was for the Board of Legislators. What was...
There's just officers who were assigned here for certain details, maybe the state of the county and things. It's a very small number.
Yeah.
The hours are very small. The increase...
Percentage is astronomical.
Either it wasn't captured correctly last year, it's probably on the same, or we had some other details this year that caused some additional overtime. Small numbers.
Bigger. We're running. Exactly. I need extra protection. I own one lane.
The bigger question is the monetization of this. Do we have the budget impact? So what did we put into the budget for, because we reduced overtime, as Legislator Myers and others and Legislator Williams led us in that whole discourse. Do we have then projected 2010 budget, 1010 line and overtime numbers that this translates into relative to what we put in the budget? We look at savings. What would be the...
I think you said 1.1 million.
1.1 is the number that's different between last year.
But what did we put? What did we put into the budget? What's the budget that we? Because remember, we put in some savings anyway.
Yeah.
Are we ahead of what we saved, or are we behind what we projected?
We'll have to evaluate that vis-a-vis what you put in.
Because that's the key thing, John.
Yeah,
right?
We had a big reduction going in
savings.
You can take the legislator out of the budget, but you can't take the budget out of the legislator.
I thought it was against the budget, but
Is it against the budget, or it's cost to cost? You're saying
it's hours to hours.
It's hours to hours.
That's correct.
So there'll be a cost savings, but we'd already squeezed that for some savings.
I didn't want to shoot from the hip, but I think you reduced it by half a million. I believe you reduced it by, and Chris is in the back there. I'm looking for the nod. I believe you reduced it by a half a million going into 2010. Is that correct?
No, they reduced it by about 150,000 to 200,000. They reduced. They took the vacancy factor against the salary, as you recall, right?
Right.
That was about 400. But typically, you underfund overtime, assuming the savings will come from salaries because of vacancies. So, like Commissioner said, it's cost to cost. Hours are saved versus prior year.
So if you can get us the budget to actual, or budget to projected for 2010, that would be the bottom line. We'd like to know what did we put into the budget for 2010, given these overtime savings and all operations in the Department of Public Safety, because there might be a corresponding toggle that might raise things. Give us what the bottom line is. Are we looking at $600,000, potential savings? Why is that important? Because that goes to fund balance for 2010. Why is that important? Because we could embed that then into savings for 2011. So we just want to get that perspective as to what the budget to actual as projected will be.
Understood.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Commissioner, if you'd like to now just give us maybe not as much the reasons why and what you see this accomplishing.
Well, I think the preliminary report that was distributed, I believe in June, sets forth our intent and our intended savings and efficiencies that can be gained by the report. Since our last meeting with Chairman Kapowitz's committee, as well as having met with a combination of the Fire Advisory Board, EMS Advisory Board, and my police board, we took note of many concerns that were coming from the various agencies that were affected. We again went back and met with the Fire Advisory Board, heard them loud and clear, and we have yet to meet with the EMS Board independently, which is going to occur tomorrow night. In response to that, we prepared an addendum to our preliminary report, which addresses many of the issues of concern. We were leery to release the draft for fear of offending EMS in that they haven't had their time to give us their full input, although I think we do address many of the issues. And if I can give you just an overview.
Commissioner, I apologize. Just one thing. Legislator, on that point.
Yeah, just on that point. That we had discussed that last time, and I think that's a crucial document to get to us because a lot of our questions may be answered in that, and we need to get back to our constituents to allay their fears and concerns. So as soon as you're comfortable releasing that document, I think that is critical to this whole process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We intend to meet with the EMS side of the House on Tuesday night for the second time. We met with them collectively with the other groups, and after that meeting, we hope to have the document done by Thursday afternoon.
And we'll have it
as soon as I can get it.
That would be hopefully the end of the week.
The end of the week. Just so if I can give you some of the issues that are addressed in the addendum, it includes capital projects, which are a matter of concern. Grant funding seems to be an issue across the board with all three services. Everybody's worried about getting their fair share of grant funding. So we have formulated a grants committee, which is comprised of members the deputy commissioners of each service, as well as members of the advisory board of each service, to determine how grants will be spent each year. We put together a budget subcommittee, which will include representatives from each service as well as the deputy commissioner from each service, and that will participate in the budget preparation process. That, along with a variety of other less significant issues, those were really what we were hearing loud and clear from everybody. And they will be addressed in the agenda.
If I could, Commissioner, just to the grant funding. It's not just how it's spent, but how it's derived. One of the things that we had noted real early on through the legislature, and when Mr. Wishing was here, and you know, forever and ever, is that if you can have, in essence, a grants department or an entity that is real high-powered and across departmental lines, substantively talented and understands, you know, the marketplace, but at the same time is really laser beam focused on grants, you could be efficient in getting more grants, and you could be more cost effective efficient because you have, this is the grants department versus having one person with no backup perhaps in each department who's, you know, just trying to either double up on the work that some other department's doing because they're stumbling all over each other, or doesn't have the resources that a high powered, where only the grants department, you know, is involved with. So not just then to the spending of the grants, which the advisories would be concerned about, but also to the funding. What kind of assurances do we have as a board and the executive has that literally every rock is being turned over, especially in this marketplace, because every dollar that's out there we want. A world where the feds are offering up incentives in various areas and maybe things that are phased in and then going to be quickly phased out. We want to be cognizant of those. So do you see some efficiencies in bringing the EMS, the emergency services, and the police side together in a one grants department that can save us some dollars because it's coordinated, but more importantly, bring in some additional dollars because it's now coordinated?
I think no question. I mean, and there is a level of redundancy where on some levels we're buying the same equipment for different departments when there's an ability to share.
Well, that's the spending side.
But if I could say this.
Sure.
In January, when I took over, it's one of the first concerns I had with public safety is that the grants were spread across the building. So after we reorganized to reduce overtime, I created a position wherein Chief McGlynn and Detective Weiss are overseeing all the grants. Everything runs through them. They're researching all the grants, and I can speak to one or two people regarding them rather than speaking to, you know, seven people across the department. So I certainly intend to take that to the next level should consolidation occur.
Right.
But the reality of it is there's talent on all sides of this. So we want to pick the best people from, be it DES or DPS, who are going to get us the most bang for our buck.
Right.
Fund.
Well, let's use Chief McGlynn, who has, I imagine, expertise certainly in the public safety end, but I don't know, and to not to personalize it, because I just don't know the level, but one could see that the individual in the public safety end would not necessarily have all the expertise on the EMS side or the fire side, right? You need to learn that, and it's a learning curve, nothing that the individual's not incapable of course, but just not the shoes that they've been walking in. So we don't want to shortchange and that the fire and the EMS side in terms of grants. So what's your plan to be able to coordinate and yet send the signal to the fire and the EMS people that by having Chief McGlynn, who's been a public safety person, we're not going to be shortchanging the fire and the EMS grants gathering side.
I think perhaps you misunderstood me.
Okay.
I was using Chief McGlynn as an example of how we were fixing grants in public safety.
Right.
I'm not yet to DES and public safety doing it together.
Sure.
But it, you know, I'm happy to read you an excerpt of how, from the addendum, of how we see it working.
Okay.
As we go forward.
I mean, that's the question. In other words, given. Right. What is the plan in this consolidation? Consolidation is right here. I mean, this.
I think if I could just jump in real quick. I understand you're talking about, you know, going out and exploring the grants and who knows the language and who knows the,
sure,
the nuances and who has the established relationships. We have them in both departments. And, you know, we're definitely going to take the biggest and brightest from both departments and put them in back into it. It's not so much EMS grants or fire grants, it's Homeland Security money. And, you know, I can assure you that we don't leave any rock unturned. The problem is many of the federal grant programs now are requiring substantial matches. And, you know, that would have to come from operating or some other source, and that's a little bit of a challenge for us. We've been creative, and we've been able to you know, get some sources to be able to get, in particular, one communication grant. We were able to get almost $1 million by finding, you know, matching money locally. But it definitely it's about creativity, and along with the grants comes a substantial amount of accountability. We just went through a Homeland Security audit where they, if you're using it for even just for security equipment, they want to make sure that the security equipment is clearly marked, that it was purchased with Homeland Security funds. So, I mean, you know, it requires a
P-Touch labeler.
But you have to be ever sensitive to, you know, when the delivery invoice comes, that needs to be copied. I mean, the chain all the way through of ownership needs to be documented, and you have to be able to just lay it right out in front of them when the audits come.
Just on that point with the grants, isn't the Homeland Security, all those grants, don't they have formulas that are derived from them? So we're not able to take money in and just decide it goes to pot A, that the pot is the police side versus the emergency services side versus a fire or EMS and that kind of thing. Those are all driven by a formula that says, are they not?
Right, they are, and actually there's a consolidation going on at the federal level right now where several years ago one of the law enforcement grants was eliminated, and attached to the state homeland money was the requirement that a certain percentage of it, 25% at least, be spent on law enforcement activities. This year, that's going even one step further, and certain health department grants are now going away from the state, and attached to the urban area security money, there's a proportion that has to be spent on health projects. So you can see that, you know, along those lines, there are requirements. There's a tremendous amount of things that are disqualified. You know, construction almost without exception across the board. You can't use them for buildings. You can't use them for any kind of things like that. You can use them for some security systems, but it's a matter of very diligent review of grant guidance. There's a tremendous amount of communication back and forth, and almost a mother may I kind of situation where you have to kind of vet out the projects that you have in the hopper to make sure that they're qualifying expenses.
And to that consolidation point, because that's happening at the funding stream level, you know, Mr. Chairman. So that at the funding stream, at the grant level itself, there's consolidation going on to make sure that the duplication that we're talking about is not occurring. So how in our consolidation model does that jive together, one? And second, on the grants matching side, how does that work as well? I mean, is that something that from a budgetary perspective that, you know, you would say, all right, we're anticipating going after $5 million worth of grant funding, which is going to require a $2.5 million match from operating, and this is what the benefits of those particular things would be, how much savings we could generate, because a lot of times with the grant funding, we know we utilize that a lot for personnel to save the operating dollar at the end, so it kind of works out. So is that in the formula in the consolidation view?
I don't know that we've specifically looked at, you know, setting aside money for match, and that's kind of a difficult pitch in this economic environment to say that, you know, we're going to set aside a certain amount of operating for matching of potential future grants. It's unfortunately the Feds and their cycle doesn't match ours, and very often they'll spring a grant on you and say, but it requires a 25% match, and it's not anywhere in sync with our budget preparations or our budget years. So it's difficult. I mean, it would almost have to be a separate category to say non-specific money reserved for potential grant matching.
Yes, Chairman Jenkins, you know, we, in the past years in our overall budget, we have cash to capital. And we, over the years, going back and forth, this more like sounds cash to grant. And whether we want to, you know, through the budgetary process, have a category cash or grant. But I think the point that you're getting to is a good point, is as the Feds consolidate around Homeland Security, as the project, maybe it makes sense for us, as we have fire, police, EMS, Homeland Security, the language Homeland Security in a consolidated fashion here to match that funding stream. But
before we get too off on the budget, I'd like to let the commissioner go back and go through his presentation.
Thank you, Chip.
Generally. But these were good questions. We have some more.
Yes, if you could. From Olivia, asked a question, if you could, for DES and DPS, grant application and grant award contracts that cover 9, 10, and 11. Can we get that? Including copies of agreements to understand the county's responsibilities. You know, major hallmark here is, for example, being able to use the revenue from the state through the evacuation planning money, we want to make sure that we can do that, et cetera. So if you could get us that information, we'd appreciate that. Legislator Nolan had a question on the DPS grants page that you gave us. John, do you have a question or thought?
Can you just explain what this page is with these?
Yeah, but both of these printouts are from the budget application. The numbers in blue are the 2010 numbers. The budget. The numbers in red are the 2011 numbers. This is a summary of the grants that are currently in the process between DES and DPS. There's a lot of 2010 and 2011 grants that haven't been completed, finalized, released. But this is as per the budget application as of a couple of days ago.
Can I follow up?
Yeah, of course.
So the red represents what we're applying for within the hopper applying for 2011.
Yes, sir.
So if there's no 2010, that's a new grant then. So, for instance, on the first page, there's one that looks like having to do with bombs.
Right.
And that approved the ability to respond to explosive devices. Right. That's a new grant.
That's money we expect in 2011.
Yes.
Is there any place where it indicates the match? I'm just looking at this. Is the match on here anywhere?
I don't know if the match is captured. I'm not sure there's a lot of matching in here. On the DPS side, Tony, on your side?
On our side, we only have one that we were able to creatively find matching money for, and that was an interoperable communication grant.
Now, I think the question would be different. The question I think that we're going to for this is, can you show us the matching money that's
right
required
on here where it
right.
Is,
right. So not that where we got
matching. I think the answer to the question is, I don't want to speak for
but for your
Glenn,
your
but I don't think there's any matches on any of this.
Okay.
Well, you'd see it under advanced grants.
Wait, one of the SRS, FHR person, to tell us.
If Chris, look at, for instance, under our grants, under Parker Control, there's a match. That's under advanced grant.
Yeah.
Well, let's take that one in particular, if I may. That's one which sticks all in our craw, because that's the one where we spend $4,800,000 to patrol the parkways, but we only get $2 million back from something from the state, right? So, for instance, there, and that, let's just focus on that for a moment if we can. That shows in 2010 we got $2,395,000. We're only expected to get, we're getting $240,000 less, so they reduced
the. Get that cut already.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, that one I don't consider a grant. I mean, we're spending the money and they're not reimbursing us, and we took that over from them long before I think any of us were ever here. So the advance to grants are basically the amount we have spent that we're projected to spend. What is other there then? What's the other on that Parkway Patrol line?
So there is from the miscellaneous budget that covers the fringe benefits.
Okay.
So the advance to grants column and the other column are operating dollars basically.
Yes.
Right. So there's not much in advance to grants at any of the other grants. I mean, I only see one other one, and that's regional EMS program, which has an advance to grants amount of $60,000. Is that operating budget money?
Yes.
Okay.
So,
this really doesn't. This, other than that one particular, well, none of these are really a matching. The advanced grants are not really matching amounts. They're amounts we're spending from our operating budget to make up a shortfall of what we need to spend for that particular operation.
Right, and this board in November will get the official 2011 request, and Commissioner Sutton's point is a good one, which is things come up during the year, and we'll have to continue to deal with that. But back, if I could, to the flow chart.
Well, I've got one more question.
Oh, sure.
On the last bunch, at the end, there's about 2.6, all in red. So those ones we're working on now for 2011, Homeland Security Program, Urban Area Security Initiative, Companion Animal Sheltering Equipment. Looks like there's no prior, was there any prior year
There's no blue there.
Not for the case grants. Those are case grants, the companion animal sheltering grants. We're doing them actually, one in partnership with Putnam and one in partnership with Putnam and New York City on those. The interoperable emergency communications grant was a one-time shot. The second one down was also a one-time shot. And I think you've heard me discuss before that the feds are almost two calendar years behind in terms of grant programs. So to give you an idea, we just now are receiving our 2009 contracts. So, and it's, here we are, you know, almost in the almost fourth quarter of 10. So by the time the process gets in play, that's why you see headlines all the time about people failing to spend grant money, but the truth of the matter is the process handcuffs you and your ability to spend grant money. By the time you get it, you're usually 2 years past the award, and that's why almost every single one of these programs is granted an extension, because you can't make deadlines.
To the page 9. Page 9 shows of the consolidation proposal. Grants, then box, at the very top, above the three service wings. How many emergency services grants people do you have now in your department?
I have actually Linda Luddy, who's my assistant, who is my liaison with the state of New York. Then I have one person who just, she works capital projects, she works budget, and she works grants as
okay.
well.
And Commissioner, in public safety, you have how many right now?
It's spread across the department to some degree, but it's centralized. See, what happens is a lot of these reports have to be written by the people who are operating the equipment you buy through the grant. So it's the central grant repository, which is essentially Chief McGlynn, does not know how the bomb squad specifically uses a particular piece of equipment or what levels of equipment they need to get from a level 3 bomb squad to a level 1 bomb squad. So somebody has to be the central repository, which we just created in DPS. And that really goes to your question from before. That's what we intend to create between DES and DPS, is once we get together, we're going to figure out who the brightest and the best are at handling the grants and create a grants unit that will be able to look for, process, and maintain the grant system.
Right. So how many of you had
part-time
people doing it? What would be the head count then of the people across the various service wings?
I don't think we know until we get there. But I think we will recover sufficient back office personnel to do it without additional expenditure.
We'd like to be apprised of that. For example, is it 6 people? Is it 12? Whatever the number is, okay?
But it doesn't sound like it's a person. It sounds like it's part of a person. It's like hours that, you know.
That's what it presents.
That's fine.
It's hours.
It could be 0.5, 0.25. I get it. What we're trying to see, because we're actually trying to keep score here, too. So we want to see if we win or lose. So if you could get us what the percentage is of various people, add them up to create whole units, come up with a number, then we have the what we just heard was 2 people, or 1.5 in emergency services. Then we want to see when we put the department into one, and we now have one grants division, do we have more people? We lost. Do we have fewer people, more efficient? We won. You know, we need to know. The reason we're doing this is for savings. We're actually trying to keep score. We're trying to save money, and in the grants case, also bring in more dollars too. The interesting part there is the revenue piece too.
You have to also understand that we don't know where the grants are going to be next year. We don't know whether there's going to be a lot more grants out there or a lot less grants out there. So
we know that we don't have much
variables that make it difficult to calculate exactly.
We're not going to keep score by putting the volume and the football of the air. We get that. That'll be next year. What we just want to get from a budget standpoint, however, is when consolidation's done, and this seems to be the low-hanging fruit, right, bringing grants together, bringing in the administrative side together, that should then give us some administrative savings because we've now put 2 departments into one. So we need half the effort, half the people for the same amount of effort, theoretically. We just want to be able to track that. So as soon as you can get to us in your department across the wide, you know, spectrum, how many people are currently doing grants, show us the flow chart that you're going to bring in to this one powerful grants area, coordinate with EMA, with the emergency services piece, and then we can see whether it achieved its savings or not, and then we can either push you to do more, or we can be assured that you've done everything you possibly can. So that's the grants consolidation piece itself.
Okay, thank you. I guess I need to make a comment here. Seems to me this is a good example. Again, it's open to all the committee members to chime in. Give me your thoughts on this. What I'm looking for
So public safety side is, all right, there's a proposal to merge the trans, to put it together, because we're told operationally it's going to be more efficient, make sense, make that judgment. Are they going to save half a person or person half? Those are all very good questions. The budget committee is not sitting here. We need to decide, Mr. Chairman, look at you as we go through this. I mean, at some point, as we get into the actual budget, we're going to need to know all that. But in terms of having to try the discussion, if we want to try to keep score, just say track, are we saving one person, half a person? And that's you know, a fair, important information to have. But first, I'm trying to make a judgment. Should they merge? Because operationally, it just makes sense. It's more efficient. I hopefully it'll save a half a person or person half. But I'm trying to understand the debate here. If we're going to, is it the budgets, you know, again, is it budget savings driving it? Is it just intellectually it makes sense? We can turn to Mr. Ryan. 12 years ago, when we pulled the departments apart, I wasn't here. I don't know if it was, at that point, operational efficiencies made sense. Did we save money 12 years ago? Maybe it ended up, because you had another commissioner, maybe it cost money 12 years ago. I mean, I wasn't here to go through that. But for public safety, I'm trying to get through this proposal to understand how it's going to work operationally. The important questions, or then what we save by that, or don't save. So to Chair Jenkins, I'm not sure how we're going to pull it together. Olivia, you know, we start bringing in the budget questions, which are good questions. I'm not quite sure where and when we do that. So, okay.
Mr. Chairman, you were not at the last meeting. So what we clearly set out was it's both. It's a two-headed hydra. We're not denying one nor the other. Consolidation is being spurred for economic reasons, but it cannot come at the consequence of diminishing the public safety component. We stated that quite clearly. We do not want to endanger people and save $3. That's not the goal here. So the goal is, in some ways, I'm not going to even argue which is more important, but they're both important. They're both on the table.
Right, but as we try to get through this, if we're trying to pin the commissioner down, the head count? He may not even know that.
No,
yet.
But in all fairness.
Sorry. Yeah. And Bill went through this once.
I think that, you know, and it's great to see our former colleague Richard Wishney here, because he reminds me of the important work that the legislature was doing back in 1998, when what we have today began. What we did at the at Mike's meeting a week or so ago was very important. What we'll continue to do in that committee, what we will be doing in the budget committee, will be very important. But that's just one side of it. And today, and I understand and appreciate the public safety, Mr. Rogowski's invitation to the Government Efficiency and Savings Committee to be present here. But today is the substantive aspects of the proposal on the table. If there's any score to be kept today, it is the score that we need to keep when we track our services to our local government partners. Are they being compromised in any way? Are they being changed in any way? What exactly does all of this mean in terms of impact on the on our local governments? We have to go back to not 1998 when we decided to separate departments, but in 1998 when we had a Department of Public Safety that was up and running and doing all of the things that it needed to do, and we had no Department of Emergency Services. There was an office of, I don't know, I guess it might have been fire prevention or, Tony, you probably remember back in the days of, I only recall the fellow's name, Walter Groden. But that particular office back in 1998, in my view, as chairman of the Public Safety Committee, was an office of not fire prevention, but an office of preventing the county to be what it was supposed to be, the coordinator of mutual aid in Westchester. And there was a whole lot of work. This wasn't done over a weekend or a Monday afternoon. There was a lot of work done by this board and the Public Safety Committee in particular, going out and talking to Adam and talking to John, talking to fire and EMS and police all across this county, locally based people, county people. We talked about the systems that were in place. We talked about the needs that we had. And we ultimately decided that what would, in fact, be necessary to do would be to create a new department. Not modify and change the Department of Public Safety, but to create a new department, because public safety was primarily police. And they had a very important job to do, and they offered very highly specialized services to people like the DA and the cities and towns and villages of Westchester. And what was necessary was the creation of a department that could handle fire and emergency medical and hazmat and chemical agents and biological agents and radiological agents that were dangerous and WMDs and that whole new world that we were introduced to after 9/11. It was costly, and I tell you, we spent weeks and weeks and weeks trying to figure out whether or not it was the appropriate way to go, because it would be the county incurring more cost. But we needed to take the steps necessary to ensure that we could competently carry out our role as mutual aid coordinator in this county, which meant that under a system of reciprocal assistance, every single municipality in Westchester would get what it would need for an emergency, an incident, at a moment's notice without question, because the very next day they may be asked to do the same thing with their neighbor. And so we looked at the organization, and why shortchange them? They warranted commissioner-level management. And should they work with pads and paper, or should they make use of the best technology available? We all remember the CAD system of years ago that, for the most part, were computer screens in firehouses that acted as nightlights. There was nothing on the screens except the glow of the green or the blue that reflected on the rig in the bay. The other boxes were collecting dust in a storeroom someplace. The system was purchased. It didn't work. There was no guarantee that you could get the equipment and the personnel to fire scenes or other emergencies. The communications system was shot up. We had 60 control manned by an insufficient number of people, not occasionally, but all the time. People sitting in bad chairs in front of screens, not for 8 hours, not for 12 hours, not 16 hours, 20, 24. Some people were putting in 30 and 36 hours at a time in front of those screens. They got to the point where they couldn't read what they needed to read in order to adequately respond to the call that had come in. This had to change, and we as a community, the county working with our partners in the local governments, the fire districts, the fire departments, EMS units, local police departments, everyone, we came together and we decided that the best way to go would be the creation of the Department of Emergency Services. And so all of the work we put in, we were pretty satisfied that was a smart thing to do. It was interesting that 9 months after its creation, the first minor task that it had to take on was to coordinate this part of the state on 9/11, when the OEM and all of New York City's operation came crashing down in a pile of rubble, and no one else could step forward to coordinate resources out of Connecticut and North Jersey and up the Hudson Valley as far as Albany. This was done by the Department of Emergency Services. So today, all I can tell you is that I understand that there are administrative functions, there's budget, there's human resources, there's grant functions, there are areas of opportunity for us to look at to see if we can, in fact, maybe through some consolidation of these functions, maybe there are ways to become more efficient in how some of these things are done. But with a whole lot of other things, I have some questions. The centralization of communications, I certainly would like to hear more about that along the lines of you're calling for a substantive review of what's being proposed. The my whole point about, will the major impact services to our localities? There's a point here made in the materials, it'll eliminate the duplication of services. I'm not aware, and I hope we're talking about the services, the specialized services that we marshal and get into communities, or the centralized services, ballistics and the like, and you know the work of DPS. There are services now that I don't. I'm quite sure that DES is not also providing ballistic services to communities, and I don't believe that a whole lot of fire and emergency medical is being handled by public safety as opposed to EMS. I see that the bomb squad merger with hazardous materials response, but I have to figure that also includes DES's operation as it oversees the chemical and biological and radiological agents of mass destruction. So there's a whole lot of things here that I'm taking a very careful and close look at. But the basic point remains is that there may be areas of opportunity, but the bigger area of our responsibilities as the mutual aid coordinator and the services that all of the communities may need at some point, that we get to them through our role as mutual aid coordinator under a system of reciprocal assistance, does all that remain intact? And all of the operations and the planning that goes on to ensure that this is a smooth operation each day, and is that going to remain intact? Mike made a good point. You know, any of our people on staff, given the right training, who are criminologists today, can they be excellent emergency medical responders tomorrow? Well, of course they can. But is that what we're looking to do? And is the scorecard really one about, you know, we have 400 people, do we want to end up with 200 people if we're compromising services? So I commend these gentlemen for putting the committee meetings together to take a look at this, and to all of you to answering all the questions that are fired at you. But I have to tell you, as one committee member sitting on public safety, I'm going to pay attention to the budget impact and the like. But my chief concern here today and going forward is going to be, will the system of emergency services that we provide, police and fire and EMS and all the specialized emergency situations and conditions that come up, is that inventory of services going to remain intact, going to be available at a moment's notice for communities when they call us in for assistance? And one final point, and it's not really tied into my last comment, but I noticed that there are things in here that will naturally prompt questions by legislators. The unification of command and control at major incidents. Well, in my view, the major incident command is provided locally. If it's a fire, it's the chief locally. If it's a police matter, it's the local PD. Unless, of course, we have a matter that involves, the feds and the FBI and that kind of thing. But on the typical incidents, we're talking about local incident command. They make a judgment. They have insufficient resources. They have a situation that's going beyond their adequate first response. Call the county to set in motion police or mutual aid, fire mutual aid, whatever is necessary. So I hope the understanding is that we're talking about a unified command for the county participation, not unified command for the county to go in and take over, because that's all a different issue. Anyway, I'll have a lot more to say, but I wanted to get some of those things on the record because Marty, this is clearly what this morning is about. They're both important. Last week and today, they're both important. But today, in my view, right now, this is of chief importance.
And if you want to get to that, but I know Legislator Harkin, do you want? You ready to?
I have a question, if I may, right, so if it's appropriate on the operational side.
Well, I'll make you be the judgment of that. I want to let the commissioner get into this, but so you want to ask it now?
Well, let me put it out, and when you sure. make your comments, I'll withhold most of my comments because you said they may be addressed in your addendum, and I look forward to that. But one of the things that we alluded to last week in our discussion that we would talk about this week is kind of it's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and this is what a lot of my constituents have been talking to me about, and we need to put it out there, and we need to have a frank discussion about it. And clearly, it's not going to be a one-time discussion. It's about merging corporate cultures and trust, and clearly, you gentlemen know better than I that we're dealing with very different corporate cultures between the fire services, the EMS, and the police services. And it kind of goes to Bill's point about unity of command. And the chief concern that I hear from my constituents, from the fire side and the EMS side, has to do with that corporate culture and building trust and a fear of the fire services being under the command of the police services. And I'm not telling you anything you don't know or anything new. You've been dealing with it for years as you work together. But I think that's something that in this we need to have a very, very frank discussion about is the reluctance of the fire services who they feel now that they will be under the command of police services. And it's building trust and it's convincing and demonstrating that there will be a chain of command and a system that honors and values their service and that they're not going to be subservient. And I think that is part of, you know, the macro that needs to be incorporated in this if this is going to be successful.
John, I mean, can we let... I mean,
well, that's just, what my point is. I'd like... I appreciated the comments, but I'd like the commissioner to go through what he was going to...
Yeah.
Okay. And then so ask questions, because you may answer some of the questions.
And only because before it goes, and certainly to hear the point. The one thing is that just as a question, don't answer it now, that for do these numbers have actual, the grants number that you gave us, are those actual numbers for 2010, or are those budget numbers? So don't answer it now, because we'll be here forever for that. And on the point that Pete was just making, it is about corporate culture. We saw about different cultures. We take two big companies like IBM and Lotus and have that kind of corporate culture, and it's two different cultures. And how do you bring those together? Well, how IBM did it when they bought Lotus, right? If you all may remember that, you may not, because that may not be your field, but Lotus was these freewheeling, hippie kind of people, and IBM, you know what IBM is like, all right? You know, straight-laced, blue suits, wingtip shoes kind of things. And you had that real corporate clash going. When IBM bought Lotus, they left them alone. They didn't do anything. They did not they didn't try to merge their functions like that. They merged the grants writing and that kind of thing to get some savings and consolidation. But they left the two organizations stand. And that is something that, you know, in the discussion that you could address, was that a consideration that said, leave the two organizations standing, but merge the functions that you're talking about operationally to get, you know, some efficiencies. Because at the end, that's what we're trying to do.
Essentially, I think that's what the report indicates. If you look at the preliminary report, you're talking about a merger of backroom operations. To quantify every percentage of person that we're going to recover as a benefit from this consolidation, it would be impossible. To be honest with you, until I get there, I'm not going to know how many people I'm going to need to do each combined function. Is there going to be savings? No question. You put homogeneous work together, it can be done by less people. Fact. That's not a guess. That's not a, you know, I'll give you textbooks that will tell you that that's the way it works. As for police, fire, and EMS working together, we do it every day on a daily basis. The people who are raising a lot of concerns, the concerns are about money, the way I see it. And I've attended the advisory board meetings. I've gone through everything. We've gone to great lengths to address those concerns in the addendum that we're preparing to submit to you. But to characterize the interaction of the services in Westchester County, that there is this dynamic where people are butting heads every day, that doesn't exist. That's on in the news from fights in firehouses on Staten Island with policemen or whatever it might be. That doesn't go on because we respond to, I've been responding to calls in this county for 27 years, and we all get along pretty well. What the grave concerns, and another thing that I should touch on as well, is lessons learned from 9/11. The biggest lesson learned across this country and around the world is unified command was the greatest failing of 9/11 because the police command and the fire command were not communicating with each other. EMS was kind of out of the picture because there weren't a whole lot of people to save, unfortunately. But police and fire definitely weren't talking. And all the training going forward across this country is about incident management teams, everybody getting together and managing the incident together. And whether it's the local fire chief who's in charge, he needs a lot of support in a big incident to get him through it. Or it's the local police chief, he needs a lot of support to get him through it. Nobody is submitting to you that the county is going to be the lead agency. One of the things we're studying at this juncture of the road is to create an incident management team for the county, which will involve police and fire and EMS people from across the county. We're going to pay to train them to be on the county team to do that. It's not about excluding anybody. It's not about dominating anybody. It's about providing support services and getting the job done the most efficient way we can. I think when you get the addendum, you have time to read it. I think you'll see that the financial concerns are addressed. The command, you know, the police dominating the other services concerns are addressed, and essentially what you have is a merger of administrative services coming together to try to gain efficiencies, and maybe they're not financial efficiencies. Maybe it's one or more, two more cops on the road instead of in a back office doing stuff that's not necessary for them to do. But there are certainly efficiencies to be gained. We'll serve when and where we're told. I'm not trying to sway you to do it or not to do it, but I'm just laying this out here as an option, and that was the intent of the preliminary report.
Commissioner, do you want to address maybe today to try to maybe, you know, as you want to, today, what happens today if there, you know, there's an incident, DES folks show up, your people show up, there's a low, as Mr. Ryan said, there's a local incident commander, but people from both county departments show up. What happens today versus what do you envision happening in the future? Would this, should this proposal get
Let me give you an example of some of the inefficiencies that go on. On Labor Day, I went out on patrol. I've done it twice since I've been with the Department of Public Safety to get an idea of what's going on the road. So I'm working 4 to 12. DES was in Tarrytown where the two firefighters died in the catch basin for an hour and a half before I even knew that an incident was going on. But yet our grief counselors were needed and resources that DPS needed were needed at that scene. No one tried to take control of the scene. We provided support services. We could have done a lot more efficiently if we were talking on a command level. We're not doing that right now.
Look, just Lynette, for that particular perspective, what was the feeling there? I mean, was it because of a line of command that, or just somebody didn't know? I mean, was it an email that didn't happen?
It's just the agencies don't talk to each other. There's separate chains of command.
But there's separate chains of command. Which functions resided in public safety that emergency services didn't reach out to quick enough or quicker, in your perspective? I mean,
well, I don't think it didn't reach out to us and quick enough. I think it was didn't reach out to us at all because we're all conditioned to think of ourselves as separate entities providing separate functions. Mm-hmm. What I would submit to you is the proper way to do it is to roll out a package. Whatever resources we have as a county, we should be able to deliver in one shot. It shouldn't be Tony gets there and he's there for an hour and a half and says, you know what, we may need some of George's stuff. Let's call George and see if we can get him down here now. That's not efficient management, emergency management. One chain of command will allow for everybody to know what's going on. My command staff gets briefings of every significant event that happens in the county. Tony doesn't get them. He should have them. We should all be on the same page. We all should be comparing notes and being able to offer our assets when they're needed.
And just on the communication portion of it, because I think that we've been, all of us, and certainly just coming off of this weekend, continue to be sensitive to the communication gaps, right? That was the problem, that the firefighters couldn't talk to the police officers. We've been working on this thing. Hell, how long we've been putting money into this thing for this new communication system. You know, I think it's the radio itself that switches frequencies that allows that is $5,000 for each unit, if I remember the number correctly. Am I pretty good?
Yep.
Hey, look, that's scary. All right, but $5,000 for that we were investing in some Homeland Security dollars, but some county dollars, capital project to do this that we approved last year, if I remember right. But the fact is that part of the communication didn't happen. The incident management, do you need a merge to do what you just said from incident management? Could you have an incident management team that exists right now, that could exist right now, that said if we have an incident like we had in Tarrytown, you know, and somebody called and they pulled the lever, right, to activate the incident management team, could you do that right now with the departments all being the same as they are right now? Because you don't provide brief counseling, DSS does, right?
No, we don't.
Right? You do that through DSS, or is it, you know, how you do your own brief counseling for the police officers?
Police side does.
And then for the families, they have the, you know, family counseling that comes from somewhere else?
Yes.
Okay, so it's the same thing. So
I guess, you know, on a more fundamental example, with communications being split, I used to be the police chief in Duffs Ferry, and I use this example frequently to kind of give you an illustration of how it's not working to maximum capacity. Your child can get abducted in Irvington and drive past 7 different police departments without the original radio broadcast going over the air so everybody knows what car to look for. It all involves calling their desk, putting it out over the hotline, rebroadcasting it to another system. There are great efficiencies in having all of these different agencies. That's on a broader scale. But for Tony not to know what's going on in my shop and me not to know what's going on in his shop makes no sense whatsoever.
On that point.
Okay, if I could add just one other thing, too. Many hazardous materials jobs that these guys are going out on, the hazmat team end up having an aerosol component, which means the bomb squad then gets called to respond an hour or so after the fact where people are exposed to a potential. Instead of us going together and figuring out what the problem is and what assets we have to solve the problem, that's what this is about, grouping homogeneous work, getting everybody to work together and to deliver a better product.
But all I'm asking, again, is can't incident management, the thing that you just were talking about,
that
could do that, you know, to build that and to say, here's the resources that we need. Because, again, in your proposal, to drive back to that, right now, you're talking about administrative stuff being together, right? So if we didn't say it was consolidation of anything other than areas you all could control right now, right? The board would have nothing to do with that. As a matter of fact, if I look up our charter correctly, you could talk to the commissioner based on what the county executive says that, you know, you all should do, and you could take those two jobs and whap them together tomorrow, right? Without any changes in the departmental structure, right?
To some degree. I mean, there's chain of command issues. There's on the police side, we function as a paramilitary organization. On the fire side as well, there's questions of who do I report to? Are the orders lawful? These are emergency situations. They're not the kind of touchy-feely things where we say, hey, what do you think? What do you think? Now, these are things where you got to be, if you're told something to do, it has to be executed.
No, but on the original, and I agree with you on that, because you know my dad was a cop, so I understand the paramilitary thing, which probably gets me in trouble sometimes. But the numbers right now, the initial proposal, the initial phase of the program is mostly administrative stuff, right? So those can move, right, without consolidation of the departments, right?
I think the intent of the plan is for everything to continue to stand alone. But if there's a way down the line that we can put 60 control and police dispatch right next to each other, so that when one side is busy, one of the guys who's not busy on the other side can walk over and help, that's what we're trying to achieve.
And for us, from a board perspective, I mean, when we got to dollars and that kind of thing, we would say, functionally, we'd want that same person because a dispatcher should be a dispatcher. Right, at least in my one person view, that if you had a screen that was an emergency services call, whether it was for police, fire, or EMS, the system and the dispatcher would know, okay, that person's calling, they need EMS, that person, and they hit the right buttons to make the thing happen. So that is part of your proposal, by the way, as far as unified communication or moving 60 control to a different location. To do that, which is another cost issue, but
these examples I think are helpful. I was going to raise this I think in our next meeting, but let me just throw it out. You, if you have an answer for it now, because maybe it makes sense. There was an incident, because I guess examples are good. A few weeks ago, Westchester Joint Waterworks, and I just saw a little blurb in the paper: a chlorine tank was leaking. Almost 40 responders showed up, and you know the health department was giving the statement to the press.
I don't know if those were just all locals, whether they're DES people, the public safety people, but Army's a little blur, 40 responders, and who's in charge? Can you address that incident now, or you have to go back? Because I wanted to use that as an example of, you know, how does that happen? How will it happen in the future? I mean, if you can't address it now, we can address it at the next meeting. But
That was a good example.
Well, that's right. To get to some of these questions, general.
And we really did it well, because we drill that scene quite often, and it was actually almost the exact same scenario that we drilled that was occurring that day. You all know that incident management, incident command rests, it starts and ends locally. But I think you heard me last time I was here talk a little bit about the fact that the county has the ability to supplement the local resources without embarrassing them in terms of, you know, an incident commander that may not be the best qualified person or have the best expertise or know how to establish the system. One of the biggest problems with incident management is people don't realize how big the incident is and the fact that they should grow the management structure for it until it's almost too late. You know, I need somebody to do this, I need somebody to do that, and that's why you see people sometimes running around really not efficiently doing a management position because they're trying to do everything. So, because if you look at emergency services, our life is all about getting there, cleaning it up, and moving on. So whether it's a police officer that goes to a traffic accident and his major objective is, let's get the car out of here so all those people waiting in traffic can move, or it's an EMS agency that goes in, let's get this person out of here and move so we can get back to, you know, businesses as usual. The thing about a larger incident is it actually is directly opposite. You have to take the time to establish the structure to be able to efficiently manage it. That's a little sidebar. But in terms of that incident there, that one worked very, very well. I can give you other incidents. I can tell you about the night that somebody stole the tractor trailer. And
no, but if I can, so if I can, I need to understand what happened. The commission went very well.
A little complicated.
But I can understand how it went well.
A little complicated because you got DEP involved as well. But the bottom line is,
Tony side of the house handled the incident command. They were on top of it. We provided support resources. We mustered 40 cops because the potential for the chlorine to get out of that building is very high. If that happens, the entire area has to be evacuated. So we met on the police side. We got together with Mount Pleasant PD and were prepared to evacuate a large segment of the community if necessary. Tony, because it was a DES function, he handled the incident command side with Mount Pleasant Fire. Everybody got along fine. They were able to contain the leak. Was put to bed quickly. The resources were needed there because the potential is if it hits the atmosphere, a lot of people could be in trouble. That's why you saw so many responders were present at that particular scene.
And who? But was DES, was the incident? Who was in charge?
Mount Pleasant Fire. I'm not sure which particular division.
Which one?
It was Westchester. I'm thinking about the one in Westchester Joint. I'm not sure where it was. But
you're talking about the one on a Sunday morning at the shaft in Valhalla.
No, it was the Westchester Joint Waterworks. I don't know if that was
in Harris.
It was in Harrison, or maybe it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was all done locally, but there were 40 responders. We'll pursue it, maybe, because we'll pursue it with you. I want to know about that.
I think
if you have other examples to share with us, that's fine.
Because
it helps the community understand how this is going to work in the future if we know what problems you run into or potential problems with the existing. As Kenny says, if there's no problem with the existing system, then you don't need to make change. I assume current examples say you can do it better. I assume that's why you're here today, because whatever's going on today, you can do it better by making it more efficient.
I think throughout this process of developing this plan, we've had to temper ourselves not to overestimate the savings or the ability to consolidate the services. We have a lot of confidence that the efficiencies are going to reap a lot more economy, but we don't want as you said before, you know, it's about saving money, but without jeopardizing public health and safety. And I think that's been our focus since day one. So if we're guilty of anything, I think we're guilty of being ultra conservative here in terms of our estimates. There are no crystal balls here. We can't tell you how it's going to go. Certainly one large event could interrupt the entire process, and maybe we wouldn't be able to focus on it for another 12 months. So we want to be very, very cautious not to take anything apart that we're going to subsequently find out that we need. And we need to do it smartly. And I think that's what you have us here for, is, you know, to do this in recognition of the economic challenges that we face, but again, without jeopardizing any of the ability
which,
to deliver.
Which goes to the timing of the budget, January 1st, and Mr. Ryan's concerns. You know, we want to really look at this before we jump into it.
Mr. Chairman, my question go to the Fire Advisory Board and the EMS Board. First question. Are there any, one of which you've met and one you have not yet met, of course, but the advisory...
We've actually met with both collectively.
Oh, you did.
And then we met individually with the fire. We haven't met individually with the EMS.
Got it. In what you've heard thus far, are there any recommendations that they made that you've incorporated as an addendum? And are any recommendations that they made that you have not incorporated into the plan?
I think what we really... culled from them was a grave concern about the marginalization of the volunteer components of the teams. I think there was a grave concern about the future of the hazmat team, the technical rescue team. There was a future about, there was a question about the future of cause and origin investigations. And I think that we went a long way to addressing them at our follow-up meeting with the Fire Advisory Board. We got a lot more information from them, but I do believe that, you know, and I don't know how best to couch this, that ultimately it's going to come down to we can try and define every single operational thing, but as we have tried to do, this really is not an operational plan, because it would be foolish of us to try and write an operational plan. We're writing an administrative plan. And we're looking at the back office kind of, you know, savings that we can get. We don't really know the operational part of it until we actually sit down and start doing that real work of saying, okay, now, how is the bomb squad going to train with the hazmat team? How do we make sure that the career members of the bomb squad are available to train with volunteer members of the hazmat team so they don't get excluded from the process? Those are the kinds of things that we're committed to do. Whether it comes down to two individuals really committed to that process working together, there are no guarantees.
Right. Well, here's a thought. I mean, you are combining the departments. Are you looking to maybe combine the advisories into a unified advisory?
If I can.
Yeah. To give confidence, because what we're seeing here could be a case of perception versus reality and a fear of the unknown versus maybe something that possibly works out. Is there some way to, how do you foster, I'm asking the question, I don't know.
Again, the way we looked at it, and every concern that Tony just reiterated, mostly came from the Fire Advisory Board.
Right.
But those concerns are addressed in the addendum in two ways.
Okay.
One is the grants committee,
right,
across all three services. The other is a budget committee across all three services.
Right.
Now, if you were to feel that, we felt that each service wanted to maintain its autonomy by having its own advisory board. If you thought a bigger board was the way to go, we're happy to give it consideration. But the sense I got is, at least on the Fire Advisory Board side, is they feel that they are an important voice and they would want to stay intact.
Okay. Last question, very, very mechanical. Last paragraph in the legislation. You're going to recommendation to keep two boards but reduce it from 21 to 15 members. Are there currently 21 people or close to it in each of the boards now that we're going to have to lop off heads, or is it that they're understocked and it wouldn't be an issue? Just
and we've actually had some difficulties getting quorums at meetings, particularly with the EMS Advisory Board. The Fire Advisory Board, we were meeting on a monthly basis. We went to quarterly because it was difficult to get attendance. So I think that, you know, that's not a
good. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
In front or
Commissioner, the lock-ins we haven't touched on, which is, so I would like to give it back to you. You know, try and look at the substance. You state in the proposal, we're going to eliminate duplication of services, centralized communications. I know Mr. Ryan wants to get back to that. Again, I'm concerned about the, how that ties into IT. They're not exactly the same, but I hear that even now DES and DPS have different IT structures or different communication structures? Is it going to be a cost or capital component to get you all together, or is that down the road? Maybe let me stop there. Can you address that, the IT issue?
I think we've met with everyone involved already to again, get our best and brightest ideas on how to do it. And we gave them, you know, we put together a committee, and their charge was, look at it. Do we consolidate? Do we move DPS with DES? Do we move DES with DPS?
Well, today, are they different today? I mean, is my premise correct? Am I understanding that they...
Systems are different, but I don't think there's any immediate intent to combine the systems directly. I think the intent is that when the police side is busy, we don't have to call three people in on overtime. When the fire side is busy, you know, we can help each other out and complement each other's work product. I think that's the initial plan. But to be quite frank with you, they may come back to us and tell us it's not feasible to do right now, at which point, you know, we certainly will take that under advice. And the reason we got the people who do it together to think about it is we want to know an honest answer. We want to know, are we doing this just to do it, to say that we're consolidating, or are we doing it because we're going to gain efficiencies and save money?
Well, I guess, but if I can, you know, to the focus on savings money, again, I look at it, if it makes sense to bring it together, you know, they said, oh, you have different systems. They may or may not talk to each other. That may cost some money down the road to bring it together to make it even more efficient. But if it makes sense operationally to start to put them together, the budget people, other people might say, oh, my God, if you end up spending $2 million on your back office systems, maybe... we're really not going to save money, let's not do it. I don't want to get those mixed up. If it makes sense to bring together, just tell us or have the system understand. It may cost some money down the road if they can't talk to each other, but that's the direction we want to go in because operationally it'll make sense. But here's the price tag. That's the kind of stuff I don't see.
That's right. And let
the commissioner...
For full consolidations, certainly it would cost money. But to move them side by side, I think together is the confusing word here. Let's say next to each other, there's two different things. To put them together is one thing. To put them next to each other is another. Next to each other is not that expensive to do, if it makes sense. And that's what we're studying right now. That would be the early stage. Full consolidation would be several years away and would require extensive study. All of our systems may be outdated by then anyway. There's all kinds of variables and factors that, you know, that are unknown going forward, but each one has to be studied individually. But do I think that putting them next to each other will render efficiencies? Yes.
I guess the members of both committees, that's what we're trying to focus on, at least with public safety.
Well, even that clarification, that's a very important point.
But there's two things here, and I don't want to merge the savings necessarily all at the same time. I need to understand if it makes sense. But if it doesn't make sense financially, then we can have that discussion.
Mr. Rogowski, Richard, you remember this. The 10, 12 years ago, we had a situation where there would be an incident, a request would go into... the 60 control agencies, personnel would be toned out, and everybody would start flying to the scene. And we were introduced to a problem where emergency responders throughout the county, whether it was the locality or the individuals, they all had their own equipment. They all made personal decisions as to what they were going to use. They could talk to the guy down the street, but they couldn't necessarily talk to other people who were en route to an emergency. And so if you had a predominantly fire or an EMS response, you had a lot of agencies moving to a scene, and they couldn't talk to one another, and command couldn't talk to them. You could get to a large structure fire, an apartment building in a city like White Plains or Yonkers, and if there were personnel on the ground or in the upper floors of a building, and a wall started to go on the west end of the building, people who saw that outside the building on the east end couldn't communicate with the people that were in the building on the west end because the systems were so balled up. The goal then of the department and the personnel, the local people who helped us, and the legislature, was to get a system where everybody could talk to everyone 95% of the time throughout 95% of the county. And it's disturbing, but it's a very good point that the commissioner has made to remind us that there's an important component involving law enforcement with also emergency response of the system that is not tied into the rest of this. So that clearly is a capital project that at least is on the table for conversation. And who knows what you ultimately do with it, and whether or not you have to scrap everything and start all over again, I would doubt. But it's a hole in the system, and it needs to be addressed by the professionals who work this day to day with our assistance as a legislature with the county executive. The other point about we read some of these materials, and some of what's suggested draws pictures that could be rather disturbing. But the commissioner's point about having communications, having dispatch, for example, next to each other where they can help out. There could be a lot of advantages to that. At least we're not talking about a situation where, on January 1st, you have a police officer who has done an excellent job handling dispatch functions for primarily police, getting general police, getting SWAT, getting specialized services, police services to an incident, confronted with a call from a local fire chief, I need an elevated water source and a bottle truck. And he's looking like, what does he need? A higher reservoir? Adam knows it's a call to Verplank, perhaps for their snorkel unit. Or somebody needs, they need bottled air and they need a lot of it. It's not all that possible to suggest that at a certain point in time, a lot of these things that seem to be similar can come together without a lot of pre-event, pre-start date training. So the commissioner's point about just being able to help out because they're next to one another, helping with dispatch, helping with communications. He paints a picture of things that could occur that would put us in a better position to handle emergencies. He also cites in the context of a discussion about administration like functions coming together. He does point out a very colorful service that we're all familiar with. The bomb truck, the bomb response, the dogs, the personnel, and it's not that it gets blended in with everything else, but it's kind of different. It's not undercover drugs. It's not ballistic. It's not crime lab CSI, but it is of a nature of emergency response that has to do with hazmat or chemical, biological, radiological incidents. So it certainly is something that maybe gets repositioned on an organization chart or is now accessible in the same way that the system accesses hazmat tomorrow morning. They can access bomb response. So I think there's a lot of potential with what is coming out here for changes in the system. But I think that the committee's need to listen very carefully to what it is that's being discussed, where it likely falls, and what we can stop short of, which may be roads, in some cases, places that we don't want to go.
Any other committee members? Are we having questions now, or are we still listening to this?
Yes, well,
kind of doing both.
Well, again, from the public safety side, there are a lot of specifics that we just haven't gotten to. But I'll leave it for today because we can't be too much longer. We've got the two commissions here for most of the morning. I'll let them, if they want to say anything, we'll put John open to a few questions, and then we'll still have to come back. John, go ahead.
Well, first, is there anything you wanted to add? I know at the beginning you offered to summarize the addendum, and that might be helpful. If that offer still stands.
Yeah, sure. I've sort of picked it apart in all different directions, but essentially the addendum is going to include how the existing units within DPS and DES are going to fall out post-consolidation. Status of the coordinators, which was a concern for the fire service, that's addressed. Personnel costs, we're nailing it down a little bit harder for the board based on our last meeting with Chairman Capitals. Capital projects, there's an analysis of capital projects on both sides and where efficiencies can be gained by combining them or eliminating proposed ones. Grant funding, speaks specifically to creating a grants committee to oversee I think by the time we meet again, there will also be a provision in there that talks about our grants unit and bringing it together in response to what I heard today. The creation of a budget subcommittee, one representative from each service that will participate in the budget process, as well as one representative from each advisory board. A grants subcommittee, which will include one representative from each service, as well as one representative from each advisory board. And then feedback, we'll outline any other feedback that we got from the meetings that we attended and that brought us to this point in the process.
It's two questions. On Chief Kapika's point about the apparent inconsistency between the organizational chart and the legislation, I take it the organizational chart is correct, and there will be three deputy commissioners, one for each unit.
The chief wasn't kind enough to copy me on his letter, so it'd be difficult to comment.
Well, okay, I'll give you the organizational chart shows three deputy commissioners, one for fire, one for emergency service, and one for police.
Right.
The legislation, which you probably have the proposed legislation.
It says the
Department of Public Safety shall consist of the following three divisions: county police, emergency services, fire services. There shall be a deputy commissioner within a department to be appointed by the commissioner, subject to the approval of the county executive to serve the commissioner's pleasure. So the issue he raised was the chart shows three deputy commissioners. The legislation, and this will get to the legislation committee someday, says there shall be a deputy commissioner within the department. Should it not read there shall be a deputy commissioner for each of the divisions? Or
we didn't prepare the proposed legislation
the law department may have misunderstood.
But right, I'm not sure where the confusion would come in, but I can tell you that we didn't draft it. We simply provided them with a copy of our proposed plan and responded to questions that were asked of us.
Okay, but the intent is to have three deputy commissioners.
That's the intent of the plan, yes, sir.
And the final question is, Chief Kapika also raised, there's been some reference today to the issue of how 60 control will operate. Can you just summarize what you envision to happen in 60 control?
Can I take a minute to read Chief Kapika's letter? I didn't see.
The part about the 60 control is at the second from last paragraph. The rest of it, I think, you dealt with the commissioner issue, the deputy commissioner issue. Most of the first several paragraphs deal with the commissioner.
But I believe, discussed this quite a bit already today. I think the intent initially is that both communication sections are remaining exactly where they are, and we've just commenced a preliminary study into the feasibility of putting them next to each other.
Okay, so when you said put them next to each other, that's what
you... As opposed to putting them together, which I think causes a lot of confusion.
You made an excellent point before that was driven home, if anyone's watched any of the recaps of what happened on 9/11, and that's the importance of unified command, and also the big issue, as we all know, is communication. This could be a benefit, which may not require a merger or not, but certainly a unified command that also involves intercommunicability is important. Thank you.
On the proposal itself, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate both of you all letting us go back and forth and discuss this stuff, because it's really important to try to understand.
Won't happen next time.
join my committee.
I'm on both, so it's okay, right?
We have different styles, too, not just you.
Wow, okay. The question is, on the projected savings that are on page 14 in the proposal, again, just for an understanding, because that helps drive us, at least for the projected portion of the components. If you could, for our next meeting, kind of drive down to understanding the difference between people being eliminated, because that's some of these numbers, right? The position being lost, right? Through vacancies, et cetera, right? And the savings, because I guess the way we would look at it is that if you arrested somebody today, and the police, public safety arrested somebody today, and they went to jail for 3 years, right? You don't get to count that arrest 3 years in a row, right? You don't get to say every year you arrested a person. You get to say you arrested them in year one. And what it looks like as far as some of the projected savings here is that we're rearresting the person every year, right? Now, we certainly could say that from point A, which is, I guess, the position count one, and we can go through these at a different time, right? From point A to point B, the cost is X in 2010, and it's Y in 2013. That's fair. But to look like we're generating, you know, $240,000 of savings a year would be inaccurate, right? Yeah, but you can't. What happens is the way that this looks is that what it looks like, and I guess it's just being from the southern part of Westchester County and we're slow down there, that we add up the years. We go year one, year two, year three, and what is out in the community, it says that we're going to save $3 million a year by doing that, which is inaccurate.
With your argument of arrests, I agree with you. With your argument of this, I don't.
Well, if you look at it inversely, if we were paying to keep the guy in jail every year, and he's in jail for the 3 years, we're paying for the 3 years. And I think that's what the chief is trying to explain, is that we should get credit for, if the guy costs 100 grand a year and he's going to be gone for 3 years, that's 300 grand in the middle of the county where we are.
A fair point. Again, that I'm just suggesting, Mr. Chairman, that what we need to say at the end of that process is that from point A to point, from the baseline to the end, this is the savings, right? So if I looked at this correctly, I'd say, oh yeah, it's $1.5 million of savings from the baseline.
Yeah.
That sounds good, you know, and whether or not we look at the numbers, because Chairman Kaplowitz talked about this last time, that said some of this was coming from 708 funding, so it's kind of going from the left pocket to the right pocket, so, you know, that necessarily isn't a savings, right? And some of them are moving, some positions are moving from from DPS to another department like DPW, so that's not necessarily a savings in the big picture. It's a savings in your department, but it's not a savings for us overall. So we just, you know,
understood. But just on that, there's three options in that one particular person. He can stay where he is. He can be transferred. He can be eliminated. So that's kind of the number you have to figure out. We don't have what's going to be done with that position at the moment. So it's put in there at the moment as being moved, but you're right, it could go to another place. That isn't meant to be funny money. That's meant to be a statement of fact that I don't know the answer to.
That was my point.
And the only other thing is, the bottom line is, this is against the tax levy. There is some money. There is some grant money being used where grant money wasn't being used before, but that grant money also increased. We're taking advantage of that. So I'm not trying to say that this is every dollar, but it is what I believe it's posted as. Against the tax levy, there will be a savings the first year of $700,000, and at the end of 3 years, against the tax levy again, compared to this year, there'll be a $1.5 million. So if trust me, in my attempt to give this in a place that you could read and, you know, go along with me, there's nothing here to try and, there's no three-card Monty going on here. This is as best as we can put together factually where the salaries are, where they're going to be 3 years from now. So, and it is against the tax levy.
And again, out of our $1.9 billion budget right now, who knows where it would be 3 years from now, but let's say out of the $1.9 billion budget, the $1.5 million savings, and half of that, or some of that coming from 708 funding, when we start looking at that and dividing that across the county, that's the choices that we have to make to say, is it worth $1.50 per taxpayer that we're talking about to do this thing if we're not going to generate the operational efficiency?
Well, okay, that's why I said, to me, you know, there's budget committee discussions, and Mike's committee discussed that. I'm trying to keep the committee focused on, does it make sense? It may cost money. It may cost money. When Bill separated out 12 years ago, I mean, I don't know how much of a financial analysis was done, but again, you created a separate commission or a separate deputy commissioner. There are extra costs. I'm trying to see, because back then, under the circumstances of disaster preparedness, it made sense to this board, to this government, to do that. We're now post 9/11, all kinds of different concerns, a lot more focus on terrorism and homeland security. No. The administration has come to us and say, in today's climate, the thinking is it may make sense to bring everyone together And then the dollars, yeah, let's try to find the dollars, but, what's driving it? I'd like to try to finish up by 11 o'clock, let the commissioners go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have one, but let me ask any other members, just some comments there. We're going to be back on this probably next week, but any other comments to finish up today?
Just make a point. I think our next meeting, whenever it is, we should have that addendum, because I think that's going to answer so many questions for both us and our constituents. So can we maybe be flexible about when we meet based upon when we have that addendum?
We'll have it at the end of this week. That's a good point, Pete. I want to just give one example of what I'd like to get to, and maybe we'll call it for a day, but because, again, for the public safety side, I think someone has to really focus on the minutiae as they get down there. There's on page 11 of the consolidation proposal, there's the idea that this program administrator, I guess currently in the fire services division, the DES code enforcement officer, would be potentially moving over to DPW. And the footnote is because that officer conducts a lot of inspections on DPW facilities. I'm putting on my sort of DOE NRC hat, it sounds like there's really no budget savings because you're taking a person. That seems to me just an operational move. But you're putting the code enforcement officer under the commissioner of DPW, and you're sending that person out to inspect DPW facilities. What we learned through the NRC process, and it's not working all that well, but maybe this is a situation, again, this is a real detail of your proposal, but maybe the person you want, if that person's main job is inspecting a lot of DPW facilities, maybe that person should not be reporting to DPW commissioner, but should be on the outside. So again,
I had that conversation with Commissioner Hsu, and we actually agreed, both of us, that the position more appropriately belongs with risk management. And that's the current plan is to move the position into risk management. They actually administer the fire marshal program, and they, it's very compatible with their program as well.
Okay, well that's fine. But again,
in law.
In law.
I want to understand the entire piece of that job. I mean, is it risk management? Whatever that inspector's doing, code enforcement. I need to know more operation. But it didn't make sense to go to DPW just off the top of my head. But that's to the committee. That's an example of, I hope, without even talking dollars, to the extent we're looking at this proposal, and that's a specific proposal to either eliminate someone or move them here to there, I would hope he's on the public safety side. We want to know, at least tell us why you think it's a good idea. What were the functions of that person? Should it go to risk management 100%? I mean, it takes it out of your budget line for budget savings, but it's not an overall. So it's really an operational question. That's an example, I hope, of things we'll get to. But for today, if there are no other comments or statements, it's just about 11 o'clock. I appreciate all of the folks in the administration, two commissioners, and your colleagues coming in. Thank you so much. And to the members of the public, thank you. We'll be having several other meetings. We welcome our former colleague, Dick Richney, and all the folks who are concerned about these issues. We'll be having several more meetings. And Mr. Ryan sounds like he has a few more things on his plate.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to continue to meet with your committee on the
Sure.
I would like to invite in the fire board.
Yes, we want to bring in the advisory boards. With that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn for both committees.
Fine.
So moved.
Mr. Harkin, second. Ms. Myers, all in favor?
Marcus, on the side. Unless I might want to move for our committee.
Second. Maybe one. Before I gavel out,
we don't have minutes. We have
it's a set of minutes from August 23rd. Moved by Mr. Nonan. Second by Ms. Myers. All in favor? Minutes are passed. And with that, we stand adjourned. Commissioners, thank you.
Democratic caucus at 11:30.
See you, Mike.
Not at
5.
11:30.
Yeah, that's the lowest. Thank
you. It could be a fair
movement.
Come down and visit. These two guys have come together.
Oh, yes. I did. After. Yeah.